Well, it's been a long time since I've given a sermon on health. Several years, 5 years, probably 4 years. And some people begin to, when you don't speak on a subject, they begin to think it's not important. And obviously our health is very important. In fact, when I came into the church, the Worldwide Church of God stressed health so much, it was often to the point that it became a religion unto itself. And that people were judged, or it was a measure of people's conversion or obedience as to whether or not they were sick. And if they were sick, it was people would look, well, wonder what their problem is or what their sin is. It became almost a religion unto itself. But in the past 30 years or so in God's church, as is usual, the pendulum has gone completely to the other ditch. And it's kind of, hey, you know, eat, drink, and be merry, and don't worry about your bodies. Well, the fact is that God desires that we be in good health. Let's look at 3 John verse 2 and see that. The Apostle John is talking to all the brethren and by extension to us today. And notice what he says in 3 John and the second verse. He says, "Beloved," in other words, those of you I love, all of you that I love, "I wish above all things," he says, 3 John verse 2, "above all things that you might prosper and be in health, even as your life prospers." Now, this was John's wish, but since it's been canonized in the Bible, it obviously is God's wish also. But as Dave pointed out in the sermonette, this is not God's world. We won't turn there, but 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4 lets us know that Satan is the god of this world and who has blinded the minds of all of the people in the world. And looking at world conditions today, it's never been more obvious. Look what Satan has done. Look what Satan has provoked humans to do. He has provoked humans to pollute the most beautiful world that could be created, to pollute it in every way possible. Man pollutes the air. Jacob Fricke went to China for a month on as far as his business. He was there for 30 days. He saw the sun 4. And 3 of those days, the only way he could see the sun was look straight up through the clouds. And in those 30 days, he saw the horizon once because of the pollution. Awful pollution. Man has polluted the water, the soil from which come all of our foodstuffs, hence the food that we eat, the inside of our homes, the inside of our cars, the inside of our office, if we're working in an office space, is all polluted because of the gassing off of the paints, the adhesives, the carpets. Our whole environment is polluted, and we live right in the middle of that. Then on top of that, Satan has provoked huge lifestyle changes in the last 30 years in the United States, Canada, and the Western world. Today, people are largely sedentary, meaning they largely sit. In 1900, 41% of the population worked on a farm. 1900. Today, less than 2% of the population works on a farm, and even then it's highly mechanized as compared to 100 years ago or 150 years ago. 78% of Americans are not meeting the basic activity level recommendations by all of the health organizations, 78%. And 25% of Americans are completely sedentary. They exercise not at all. Edward C. Archer, who is a nutrition and obesity researcher at the University of Alabama, he put sensors on almost 2,000 people to see what they did all day. And he said this, I'll just quote one sentence from the report. Quote, "Unfortunately, we live most of our life going from chair to chair to chair," end quote. The majority of people do that. Satan has provoked that, and we'll see why in a bit. Satan has also provoked radical changes in the eating habits of Canadians and Americans and in the Western world over the last 30 years. On any given day, one quarter of the entire American population eats in a fast food restaurant. On any day, a quarter of the population. That's 70 to 80 million people every day eat in a fast food restaurant. The entire American population eats at a McDonald's every 14 days. Well over 300 million people. Every month, 90% of the children aged 3 to 9 eat at a McDonald's. Every month, 90% of them. The average American every year, now listen to this, the average American every year eats 28 pounds of fast food French fries. That's not just whole potatoes. This is fast food French fries, 28 pounds a year. Every year, the average American drinks over 40 gallons of soft drinks. You know what that equals to in teaspoons of sugar? 4,600 teaspoons of sugar a year for those who drink 40 gallons of soda pop. If you can imagine that, think what 4,600, it's over 4,600 teaspoons of sugar does to your insides. Now just think about that. You see, the problem today is while we are sitting more and more and more, and most of each day we're sitting, and because of that we're burning 600 to 700 less calories than 50 years ago or 100 years ago, at the same time we're consuming 1,900 more calories than people did 37 years ago. 1,900 calories more a day, burning 600 to 700 less, and guess what the result is? Because of this sedentary lifestyle and an increase in food intake, people are getting heavier and heavier and heavier. In 2012, 69% of the U.S. population was overweight, 59% in Canada. And in 2012, 30% of the children were overweight because they're just as sedentary as their parents. Video games, computers, cell phones, and so on. So as a result of the pollution, of the overeating, of the sedentary lifestyle, guess what? The U.S. and Canada is filled with sick people, very sick people. Just some examples. Cancer. Last year in the USA, 580,000 people died from cancer. 580,000. Over that. And last year, new cancer cases were 1,660,000. New cancer cases. And of course, a sizable number of those will die. Heart disease. In the USA, this year, over 920,000 people, almost 1 million people, will have a heart attack this year. Think about that. And over 1 million die every year from heart disease. And guess what that costs? It's expected this year, heart disease alone is going to cost this country $500 billion. Because people are eating wrong, they're sitting, and because of the pollution around. Two-thirds of all the health-related deaths in the United States are self-inflicted. We do it to ourselves. Half of those are smoking-related. And we understand all the dangers of that, and thankfully, when we came in the church, people stopped smoking, those who were. But the other half of these health-related deaths are lifestyle-related. In other words, inactivity, overweight, drug abuse, alcohol abuse. We do it to ourselves, and that just shouldn't be. You see, Satan is setting up an environment where people suffer, and he gets great delight in causing people to suffer, and the modern nations have swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. People today suffer and suffer, and they don't feel well. Now, we as God's people are not immune to these influences from Satan. We're not immune. Look at the Sabbath update. Look at the sickness of God's people in the Sabbath update. We, if we're honest with ourselves, we're all influenced by the society we live in. You know, the soda pop's there, the McDonald's are there, the sugar is there, the potato chips are there. We're all influenced by that. And at one time or another, all of us have neglected our health. I'm as guilty as any. We've all neglected our health. We've gotten off track. And please understand, I am not picking on anyone at all. I'm not pointing fingers at anyone except right here. Because I need this as much a reminder as much as anyone. And we need it more and more as we get older. Because teenagers can eat the styrofoam box that a McDonald's comes in, and they're fine for a few years. They'll pay for it down the road, but they're fine. But as you get older, you can't do that anymore. And so the reality is, in Satan's world, God's people have an uphill battle to retain our health. It's an uphill battle. Now, the important thing we need to understand, and this is all by way of introduction, God holds us accountable for our health. We can't blame it on the government. We can't blame it on the grocer. We can't blame it on the farmer. We can't blame it on the food processor. It's us that God holds accountable. And the reason he holds us accountable is he has given us the gift of the bodies we have. James 1, verse 17, let's turn there. This is a principle from God that we need to remember. James 1 and verse 17. Everything we have that is good and right and proper comes from God. James 1, verse 17. It tells us, every good gift, every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. And one of those gifts that he gives us is our bodies. Now let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and we're going to read verses 19 and 20. I'm sure you know what the scripture is, where we're going with this. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 19 and 20. Paul reminds the Corinthian church, as messed up as they were, he had to remind them and tell them of this. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19. He says, what? He was just astonished. He says, don't you know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you, which you have of God, another gift of God, and you are not your own? Once we're baptized, we become God's property. And our bodies, it houses the Holy Spirit. Verse 20, for you are bought with a price, Christ's sacrifice. He says, because of that, therefore, glorify God. Now notice what he says. Glorify God in your body, number one, and in your spirit. The Greek can mean mind, what you think, what your motivations are. And he says, so glorify God in both your body and your mind, which are God's once we're baptized. So what this tells us is we can't neglect our bodies. What our body does, yes. What our body looks like, the health of our body, the stamina of our body, the strength of our body. We have an obligation before God to take care of the gifts he has given us, especially our bodies, because, hey, it's the only one we have. We can't trade it in on a new one until we become spirit. Now, let me give you an example of a man who did not do that. He was one of my heroes. When I grew up in El Paso, Texas, I loved baseball, and he was my number one hero. That was Mickey Mantle. He was a center fielder of the New York Yankees from 1951 to 1968. He hit the ball farther than anybody, even to this day. Even in the steroid era, he has hit the baseball farther than anybody. He ran the bases faster than anybody. He was given a gift that very few humans have been given. He was even tested. His muscles were different in his legs. He could run faster by far than anyone of the day. But because of the lifestyle, he was a young kid out of Oklahoma, because of the lifestyle at that time, New York Yankees, he became an alcoholic. And his liver was severely damaged because of the alcoholism. He developed hepatitis C and eventually developed cancer. He died in 1995 of cancer at the age of 64. What a waste. And he did all those things. Many of his feats in baseball were done while he was an alcoholic. And you could just only imagine, if he took care of his body, what kind of records he would have set. I'm quoting from him now. This was at the end of his days when he learned he was going to die of cancer. He said, quote, "Don't do as I did. I'm living proof how not to live," end quote. Then he also said, quote, "If I'd known I was going to live so long, I'd have taken better care of myself," end quote. Big, big example for us there. But like Mickey, some of us don't put forth the effort to take care of the bodies that God has given us. Don't work on it. Don't put forth the effort. And then when they become sick, I get a phone call and they want an anointing or a cloth and basically are asking God to say, "I want you to wave your magic wand and make me all right and heal me completely. I haven't done anything to help my health, but I'd still want healing." And God sometimes, I believe, replies, "Hey, you've got the knowledge, you've got the means, you've got the tools, but you're not doing what you can, therefore why should I heal you?" And I think that is a reality why sometimes people are not healed, because God is waiting for them to do their part, and then He will step in and do what we can't do once we put forth the effort. Now, the key to good health is to prevent becoming ill. You know, it's kind of like trying to shut the barn door after the horse is gone. You want to keep the barn door closed before the horse leaves. So we want to do all we can to prevent illness. And we have to understand that our health is more valuable than all the money in the world. Let's say we won the lottery, say $50 million. You had three homes. A whole stable of automobiles. You know, you had a home at the beach, a home in the mountains, a home in a big city, clothes, furniture, everything you could want, servants and all of that. And if you ached the whole time, if you hurt the whole time, if you felt weak the whole time, if you had no energy the whole time, do you think you might trade that wealth to just feel good? I think most of us would. Most of us would. But you see, changing lifelong habits is hard. It's hard for all of us. But I'm going to ask you today to do just that. And most importantly, you see, when you do, these changes will make us all feel better. Every day we feel better. And I'm not asking you to do anything I haven't done already or am not currently doing right this minute. So I'm not saying, do what I say, not what I do. So the title of the sermon is that we have to take care of the bodies that God has given us. Now we have two major points. The first one is we have an obligation to feed our bodies properly. Now if we've been in the church any length of time, how many diets have swept through the church that we're going to solve all our problems? If you just eat this or take that or not do this or not do that, you'll have perfect health. We've all been there. We've all done that. And I've been guilty of those myself over the years. For the most part, though, diets don't work on the long haul. They just don't work. Because after the diet is over, the weight comes back and people go back right to where they were before. And then down the road, nothing's changed. But the up and down, particularly if you're trying to lose weight, the up and down of what, gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight over a 10 or 20 year period is really hard on the body. Very hard on the body. The reason with these diets, the problem with them is they can't be sustained. You can go into it for a few weeks, a month or two, but to sustain it, it's impossible. People just can't do that. And so the solution, and here it's so critical to understand this, the solution is not a diet. The solution is a permanent change in what we eat and how much we eat. It's got to be permanent. It's got to be sustainable. Now, I've done a lot of research on this over the years. I've been through a lot of diets, and the best advice that I have ever heard is so simple. And we talk about the simplicity of Christ and how God's plan is so simple. Well, this one diet advice is so simple. It's only 7 words. And we're going to cover that under this first point. 7 words. And it comes from Martin Collis, who is a retired University of Victoria physiologist. 7 words. Just remember these 7 words. Eat food. Not too much. Mostly plants. Eat food, not too much, mostly plants. Now, we're going to cover those in this first point. So point A, if you outline, eat food. What does he mean? He means eat real food. Now, the food that's in the grocery store or at the restaurant, most of that isn't real food. What we need to do is eat food that spoils, but eat it before it does. In other words, don't eat food that's so filled with preservatives it never spoils. You take that Twinkie, go get a Twinkie, put it out on your compost pile, and come back a month later, and it's still there. Get that maraschino cherry that's bright red that's on top of your sundae, throw that on the compost pile, come back a couple of weeks later, it's sitting there just as red as it was before because it's full of chemicals. That's not food. That's not food at all. Now, the Bible is not a physical health manual. It's a spiritual health manual, but it's not a physical health manual. But it tells us what food is. In other words, what it defines what is real food. And we know that, clean versus unclean meats. We understand that. We're not going to go into that today. It also gives us certain examples. But it is not primarily a health manual, a physical health manual. But the fact is, we must eat food that is real food. Fast foods are not real food. One of the major networks, this is about 15 years ago, commissioned one of the reporters. He's a well-known reporter. I can't recall his name right now. They commissioned him to eat at a McDonald's for 30 days. 3 meals a day, 30 days. This was in New York City at McDonald's. They gave him a physical checkup and weighed him and all that before the experiment started, and they weighed him and gave him a physical afterward. During those 30 days, he gained 20 pounds. His blood pressure went through the roof. His blood sugar went through the roof. His heart rate was up. They showed pictures of him. He was puffy. His eyes were puffy. He said he wasn't sleeping well. He felt horrible because of what he was putting into his body. Fast foods are not real foods. Junk foods are not real foods. Potato chips, pastries, donuts, candy bars, cereals that are filled with sugar, highly processed foods, fried foods are not real food. They might taste good, they might look good, but they're not real food. You see, they're not real foods because they don't nourish the cells of our bodies. Real food does. And anything with sugar in it is not a real food. And so much of the stuff that we eat today is loaded with sugar, especially high fructose corn syrup. I gave a sermon on that here, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. But the problem with high fructose corn syrup is it does bad things inside our body. And one of the things it does is it doesn't produce a chemical that makes us feel full. It prohibits that chemical from being formed. Therefore, you can just stuff this, keep putting it down, and you don't feel as full as if you ate food that didn't have high fructose corn syrup. I was talking to Roberta Vinger the other day, and Roberta has had stage 4 kidney cancer. It's been in remission for 4 years. It's come back now in her spine. She was on a very strict anti-cancer diet. She's back on that now. And she made the point, she said, sugar, one of the first things you get off of when you get cancer is sugar. She said, sugar is like gasoline on a fire. The fire is cancer. The sugar is gasoline, and you pour it on, and the cancer just accelerates. It's rocket fuel for cancer. So one of the things that we have to stay away from is anything with sugar, as much as we possibly can. So the first point is eat food, real food, food that nourishes the cells. Second point he made, the three middle words, not too much. Now, 20 years ago in Yakima, we had about this time of year, we had a church picnic. And a couple of the ladies were taking pictures and all of that. And so the next week, they brought the pictures to church, and I was looking at them. And I saw a side view. It was kind of from the shoulder down, some guy that had a belly. And I thought to myself, who on earth is that? And as the thought was coming into my head, I realized it was me. It took a picture of me sideways. You know, when you're in front of the mirror, you know, you kind of suck it up and it's not so bad. But it was bad. It really was. I was a T-bone shy of 200 pounds. And, you know, the gut was out there. And here's the reality. Most people after age 30 gain 1 to 2 pounds a year for the rest of their life. After age 30. Why is that? And you know, if you've ever gone back to a high school reunion or college reunion, hey, we're all skinny back then, but now nobody's skinny because of that fact. The reason it happens is that our metabolism, the engine inside us, the furnace inside us that converts food, which is our fuel, into energy, that engine, as we get older, begins to slow down. The fire begins to go down. So we don't convert fuel, food, to energy as efficiently as we did when we were teenagers or in our 20s. But the problem is, we keep putting in the same amount of fuel, even more. But the body isn't burning it up. So what the body says is, hey, this guy's feeding me more fuel than I can use, so I better save it up for a famine. I better put it in the warehouse. Well, where's the warehouse? Oh, it's right here, and our legs and our jowls and everywhere else. And so the body stores it up, which is normal and natural. And the storehouse is where we really don't need it. Now, in addition to that, some of us are genetically predisposed to be heavy. That is a proven fact. We're also genetically predisposed, some of us, to have diabetes or get cancer. That's just another fact. But it's a special burden for people who are trying to keep their weight under control because they're getting older and older if they're genetically predisposed to be heavy. I am one of those. My dad was 5'9", weighed 230 pounds. His sister was the same height. She weighed the same. He had another sister that was 5 feet tall and weighed 180 pounds. Both of my grandmothers, were very heavy. And it just runs in the family. And so, those of us who have that predisposition, we have to battle that on top of the world, on top of getting older, too. And it's something I battle every day. Now, look at the huge portions that are served when we go to a restaurant. You know, we talk about, he's saying, not too much. But you go to a restaurant and you have this platter that could feed 3 or 4 people. What Dorothy and I have learned is we cut it in half and take half of it home. And Dorothy doesn't have to cook the next day, which she loves, and we don't eat as much. But it's in front of us all the time. And so as we age, we need to reduce the amount of calories we take in because our metabolism isn't churning as fast as it used to. Now let me give you three examples of how bad it can be. If you have one extra helping, doesn't make any difference what it is, one extra, you know, scoop of whatever, it might be mashed potatoes, it might be the extra enchilada, you know, it might be another handful of French fries. If you have one extra helping 3 times a week and do nothing else, you'll gain 9 pounds a year. Now, if you have one extra soda pop a day, one extra soda pop a day. Hopefully it is the soda pop, but that's not for most people. But adding an extra soda pop every day for a year, and you'd make no other changes, results in gaining 15 pounds a year. Now, like our police buddies do, if you had one glazed donut a day for a year, every day for a year, you would gain 30 pounds. One donut, and you didn't change anything. One donut. Now, another huge problem is that because of the pollution we've talked about and the soil and all of that, we constantly have toxins coming into our body from the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the foods that we eat. Toxins are stored in our fat. That's why when we fast, we feel so horrible. Because we're not feeding our body, so the body says, I got to go to the warehouse, and starts getting energy from our fat. And the fat contains all these toxins. The toxins dump into our bloodstream, and people feel miserable when they fast. So if we have less fat, there's less storage space for toxins. And that means, since there's less storage space, the body flushes more of the toxins out through our elimination system. So the key is to stop eating before we get full. But the problem is, in America, we don't do that. We're a nation that's fast-paced, and we eat fast, we work fast, we do everything fast. And in the military, when I went to military school, if you didn't eat fast, you didn't eat. And you sit down and just scarf the food down. It's amazing. You can go through a whole Thanksgiving meal in 20 minutes. Think about that. Takes all day to fix, but most of the people can eat the whole thing in 20 minutes because we're just shoveling it in. And we have to not allow ourselves to ever get to that point where you just feel so stuffed. But we've all been there. You feel so stuffed you just want to puke. And we can't allow ourselves to get there. Now, in the more civilized societies in Europe, their meals last 2 hours, 3 hours. You go to a restaurant, you get a course, then you wait for 20, 30 minutes, get another course, wait for another 15, 20, 30 minutes, get another course, and the food has a chance to settle, and then you have the chance of feeling a little bit full before you start shoveling in the next course. We need to slow down in our eating habits. That would be a big help, but we've got to stop eating before we're full. So this, not too much, the point B, is we need to eat the right foods in the right amounts. As an example of what can be done, Amber King, who is here, has lost, over the past few months, has lost 38 pounds. Shiloh Ensminger and down in Prosser has lost 35 pounds. And I told you, you know, when I looked at the side view of my belly, I said, that's it. That's enough. This isn't going to happen. I was, like I said, just a skosh shy of 200 pounds. Stepped on the scale this morning, I'm 180. And it's been that way for quite some time. Just brought it down over the years. If I can do it, anybody can do it. So, eat food, not too much. Point C, mostly plants, foods that come from plants. In other words, we need to eat a lot of grains, a lot of fruits, a lot of vegetables. Now, with that in mind, let's go to Ezekiel chapter 4. Now, we're going to break into the context where God told Ezekiel to lie down 430 days, to lie down on his side. And he went on one side for 390 days for Israel and 40 days on the other side for Judah. Now, here's a guy, God's saying, I'm going to ask you to do something that's not natural. You're not going to be moving. You're going to have no physical activity. So you're going to have a problem with elimination. You're going to have a problem with keeping healthy. And so what God did is prescribe him a diet. So it's kind of instructive to look at the diet. Look at verse 9 of Ezekiel 4. I'll read it out of the NLT. Verse 9. Now go and get some wheat, barley, beans, lentils, millet, and spelt, and mix them together in a storage jar. Use this food to make bread for yourself during the 390 days you will be lying on your side. Ezekiel 4, now verse 10. Ration this out to yourself. 8 ounces, Clark's commentary says 10 ounces, of food for each day and eat it at set times. Clark says that they took the 10 ounces, baked him a loaf of bread, and he ate the whole loaf, you know, scattered it out through the day. Verse 11, we're told, then measure out a jar of water for each day and drink it at set times. But notice the recipe for bread was a variety of grains and a variety of fibers. And the water, the fact is today, you know, 75% of Americans are chronically dehydrated. I've been one of them. The lack of water is the number one contributor to feeling fatigue during the day. 5 glasses a day of water will decrease your risk of colon cancer by 45%. Now think about that. 8 glasses a day will reduce the joint and back pain for 80% of the people that can drink 8 glasses a day. I am guilty of that. I've suffered that heat stroke from it. And so I'm a little water magnet now. I drink lots of water. Had to learn the hard way. But God is saying to Ezekiel here that here's what I want you to do. I'm going to give you a diet that will preserve you, give you the nutrients you need, allow you to eliminate even though you're not moving around, and the water will help do that, and it will help sustain you. So there's a lesson there for us on things that we should eat and drink. The other thing that we should do when we talk about mostly plants is that we need to limit our intake of red meat. Now, I've talked to church members before, and they said, oh, the Bible talks about meat, and we just got to have our steaks, and we got to have our roast, and we got to have this, and got to have that. And one of the biggest proponents died of cancer, colon cancer, here a few years ago. Just wouldn't stop eating beef. The thing we have to understand is the beef available in biblical times is totally different than the beef that's available today. They didn't have growth hormones. They didn't have antibiotics. They didn't have genetically modified food that they fed the beef. And they didn't have the pollution in the soil and the water that we have today. So the beef today, is you can't compare it to the beef that was available to the patriarchs as an example. And what we have to do too is eat food that does not hurt us. In other words, it doesn't cause inflammation or irritation that we're not allergic to. Jack Elder gave me permission to use this. Jack has been a diabetic for decades. He used to be on insulin, used to be on pills. And finally, he just said, I had enough. He said, I can control this through diet. And he has been on a strict diet for the last 2 or 3 years. He uses no insulin. He uses no pills. He feels better than he's ever felt. Because of diet, controlling your body through what you eat. John Pollock. John, you know, for the last several years has had incredible tendonitis in both elbows. In fact, remember a couple of times we had to take him off the speaking schedule for a given Sabbath because he couldn't sit at the keyboard and type out a sermon. The tendonitis was so painful. And he and Shelley have started a diet that eliminated irritation-causing, inflammation-causing foods. And within a couple of weeks, I think it was, as I recall, the tendonitis is gone. And it stayed gone. It's not there. It's just gone. No pills, no operations, no drugs. Just finding out what foods irritate the body and stay away from them. You see, the solution to eating right is making permanent changes in our eating habits. Not diets, not fads, permanent changes. We have to eat food, not too much, mostly from plants, in a way that you can sustain and in a way that you can make permanent. Very, very important. Okay, the first point was talk about what we put in our bodies. The second big point we want to make is we have an obligation to move our bodies and exercise our bodies. God designed our bodies to work, to move. They were designed that way. Now look at the example of Jesus Christ. If you do the calculations, Nazareth was about 65 miles as the crow flies from Jerusalem. The males were required to be in Jerusalem three times a year. Now, the road wasn't as the crow flies, but let's just say 65 miles. So that's three times 130 miles that Christ walked to Jerusalem every year. We also know he was a carpenter, and he didn't have a pickup truck. He walked around, going from job to job to job, and he walked. Everybody walked. They didn't have, you know, like the West, we're familiar with horseback transportation, or he didn't have a cart with a donkey pulling it. He walked. And remember, he was a carpenter with no power tools. So Christ set us the example. He probably walked 1,000 miles a year, 800, 900, 1,000, maybe more miles a year. He was in good health. He moved. Martin Collis, the one that said, eat food, not too much, mostly plants, says, quote, we come with a roughly 100-year warranty, but you've got to read the fine print. You've got to move, end quote. Not chair to chair, we've got to move. Now, let me explain for a minute what exercise does for our bodies. Our heart, it is a muscle. It's a muscle that starts beating when we're in the womb and doesn't stop until we die. Think about that. I mean, you think about the millions of times it beats. Now, somebody who is out of shape, their heart beats about 80 to 90 beats a minute because it is so out of shape and so inefficient. So to get the blood the body needs, that heart has to pump 80, 90 times a minute. Now, somebody who is in shape, aerobically in shape, because as we exercise, the heart muscle gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And as it gets stronger, it gets more efficient. So each squeeze, it squeezes more blood. So somebody who is in shape, their heart beats 45 times a minute to 60 times a minute. A third to a half of what somebody out of shape has to have their heart beat in order to have proper circulation. Now think of the wear and tear on the heart valves on somebody's heart. Think of how you could reduce the wear and tear if you beat a third to a half as much over your lifetime. So aerobic exercise in general, helps strengthen the heart. Exercise also increases the blood flow to every part of the body. More oxygen, more nutrients to every part of the body, especially the brain. It nourishes the cells and it flushes toxins out of the body. And an efficient exercise allows that to happen, at double time or triple time. Exercise also induces an artificial fever in our bodies. That's why we sweat when we exercise. The body gets hotter, our body temperature goes up, we start sweating to cool the body down. Well, guess what? All that sweat eliminates toxins in our body also. The toxins come out in our sweat. But it's my speculation. I've never read a study on it. But I believe this artificial fever, when our body temperature elevates 2 or 3 degrees, when we're exercising hard, it kills bad bacteria, it kills viruses, it kills cancer cells, just like our body does when we get sick and we have a fever. That's the way the body fights. So it seems logical to me. It seems absolutely logical that when you exercise and generate your own fever, it is helping you kill bad stuff in your body. And the nice thing, for those of us who like to eat, is if you exercise, you can eat almost as much as you would normally and lose weight. What a concept. Now, that's not true for everybody, but it can happen for many people. But guess what? Human nature resists exercise. I've said it before. If you feel the urge to exercise, lie down on the couch and it will go away. And that's true. You know, sometimes we just feel like we need to get out and move. Well, act on it, because if you don't, it'll go away. The Center for Disease Control in the United States said 250,000 deaths every year in the United States are attributable to a lack of regular exercise. 250,000 people die unnecessarily. Think of this. The Times Colonist, which is the paper in Victoria, British Columbia, in an article on December 17th in 2003, the title of the article was, Fruits, Vegetables, Exercise are the Key to Avoiding Cancer. The article was written by Dr. Terry Sullivan, the Vice President of Research with Cancer Care Ontario. He says, quote, just listen to this, I think we need to start thinking about diet and physical activity in the same way we thought about tobacco 10 or 15 years ago. Because lack of physical activity and improper diet do the same damage as smoking. And we know what the damage smoking does. And I was thinking this as a joke. You know, years ago, you couldn't be baptized if you were smoking. What if we use that same logic and said, you can't be baptized unless you're exercising and eating right? Now, we're not doing that, but you know, the logic is there. Let me give you an example of an event that changed my life, absolutely changed my life. I was in a job in Boston. We were the largest specialty manufacturer of loudspeakers in the United States at the time. And we got into financial difficulty. We spent a lot of money on research and development, and it didn't pay off as fast as we thought, so our cash flow was in the toilet. And I came to work every day knowing that if I didn't sell X number of loudspeakers that day, the bank would call our loan. We had 600 employees, and all of us would be out on the street. And so during that time, I began to develop tension headaches. Didn't know what a tension headache was, but it was just like your head was in a vise right here. Started in the morning, got to work, ended when I went to bed, went to sleep, and then the cycle started all over. Lasted for weeks. And finally, I got a recommendation of a doctor in the area who came highly recommended. Went into his office. I was in my early 30s. My guess is he was probably in his early 40s. Bald as a cue ball, skinny as a rail. And he sat me down, and I explained what my problem was, these tension headaches. And he said, do you smoke? And I said, no, I've never smoked. He said, good, because if you smoked, you couldn't be my patient. I don't deal with smokers. Said, okay, well, hey, I'm kind of liking this guy. And then he said, do you exercise regularly? I said, no. I said, I play basketball maybe once a week or once every other week. And he said, okay, you got a choice. You either start exercising tonight when you get home, and you can be my patient, but if you refuse to do so, you can't be my patient. And I said, I like this guy. And so he says, I am not going to treat people who don't do their part. I refuse to treat people that aren't going to do what they need to do. Now, if you want to do your part, we can start a relationship and I can help you. But if you don't, I'm not even going to charge you. Just leave. And I exercised that night, and I started exercising every night when I got home from work. And within 2 weeks, the headaches were gone, because of the benefits of exercise. The New England Journal of Medicine said in 2002, quote, a study that was done. The study found that the greatest predictor of death other than age is the biggest predictor of death, because obviously the older we get, the more likely we're going to die. The study found that the greatest predictor of death aside from age among more than 6,000 men. Now this is a big study. The greatest predictor of death was a low level of cardiovascular fitness, that is how much aerobic exercise they got. Of all those men, you want to predict their death, pick the ones that don't get any aerobic exercise. That's what the study showed. In a Newsweek article called Running for Your Life in March of 1986, this study looked at 17,000 Harvard graduates. Another, a huge study. I'm quoting now from the article. While previous studies indicated that exercise protects against heart disease, which we all know, Harvard's is one of the first studies to show a favorable effect of exercise on mortality from all diseases. Cancer didn't make any difference. All diseases, diabetes and so on. It goes on to say, quote, men who improved from unfit to fit reduced their risk of death as much as smokers who quit smoking just by getting some aerobic exercise. Exercise reduces the risk of heart disease. The Harvard University's Nurses' Health Study said walking a mile every 15 to 20 minutes for 3 hours a week cuts the risk of heart disease by 40%. You know, what if you could take a pill that could reduce the risk of heart disease by 40%? People would be flocking to it. But going out and walking, oh no, we can't do that. That takes too much time. It really doesn't. A Duke University study said that regular exercise, including walking, reduces the risk of stroke by a third. Just regular walking. Go out and walk. Exercise reduces the risk of diabetes. The Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston, Massachusetts, found that 30 minutes of moderate exercise every day reduces the risk of diabetes by 58%. You know, this is the magic pill, as much as there is a magic pill. Exercise reduces the risk of colon cancer. A University of Arizona study found that walking for an hour a day dramatically lowered the risk of colon cancer, and they found out why. The constant bouncing, you know, when you walk, the jostling of your body, it hurries the food through your digestive system, so the carcinogens, the toxins, don't stick and stay close to the lining of your intestines long enough to start changing the lining into cancer cells. It hurries the food through the body by the jostling of the exercise. Exercise also increases your brain function and your memory. Isn't it amazing? Exercise can make you smarter. John Ratty of the Associate Professor of Harvard wrote a book, The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise and the Brain. And he discovered in his research that there is a protein that builds and maintains the circuitry inside brain cells. It's a specific protein. He called this specific protein, he called it the miracle grow for the brain. And guess what increases this protein? Exercise. He says, quote, researchers have studied how exercise affects things like improved memory, academic performance, and executive function at work. The connection is powerful. Isn't it interesting? Exercise also reduces anxiety. University of Illinois study found that out. A Queen's College in the United Kingdom found that out. If regular exercise reduces the anxiety level of people. Exercise also reduces sleep problems. The National Sleep Foundation survey found that people who exercise regularly had 50% less sleep problems than people who were sedentary. So we see here, and this is just scratching the surface, we see here that God designed our bodies to work. Let's go to 1 Timothy 4 and verse 8. I'll read it out of the NIV. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 8. Paul is instructing young Timothy and giving him some advice. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 8 out of the NIV. Paul says, for physical training is of some value. He says, but godliness, you know, he's telling us godliness has a greater value. It has a value in all things, holding promise for both the present life and the price of life to come. So you see here, godliness helps us not just today, but in the life to come. What he is saying is physical training helps us today, but godly exercise helps us both today and tomorrow, in the world tomorrow. The Greek word for physical training, Thayer says, is, quote, the exercise of the body in a school of athletics, end quote. And, you know, the Greeks were famous. They invented the Olympics, and they put a lot of stress on physical fitness. We would say today at the school of athletics, it would be a gym. So Paul says going to a gym has some value. Now, let me give you two examples of the good and the bad of exercising and not exercising. Dorothy's oldest sister announced fairly dramatically about 5 years ago. She said, I'm through walking. I'm done. I'm finished. I've earned the right to sit. And I've had a long life. She was, 75 or so. I'm just done walking. And she didn't walk. She'd go down the elevator of their condo, get in the car, go to the parking lot of the grocery store, walking to and from the grocery store is about the exercise she got. And guess what? 5 years later, she had a knee replacement. Her muscle tone was so bad, her ligaments and tendons were in such bad shape that she had a horrible recovery. Took her, she's still not totally over it, and it's been a year, I think, or maybe about as much. And at the same time, she has early onset of dementia because she's not getting any circulation to her brain. Then contrast that with a guy named Hans that I know in Victoria. He's in his mid-80s and went to an exercise facility. I first saw him there. And I went and exercised for an hour and a half. And when I got there, this guy was swimming laps, back and forth and back and forth. When I left, he was still going back and forth. And so I had a chance to meet him a few months later. Saw him in the change room and introduced myself. And I said, man, you really exercise. And he had a very thick German accent. And he said, yeah. He said, 80 laps a day. 80 laps a day. And he said, and I said, well, okay, what are you doing with that? He says, my goal is I'm going to swim the equivalent from Victoria to Hawaii. And I looked it up. It's 2,670 miles. And so, and I would come down there and he back and forth and back and forth. And in 2012, I think I met him around 2000, 2002, somewhere in there. In 2012, I asked him, I saw him and I said, hey, Hans, have you got to Hawaii yet? And he got this big grin on his face and a glint in his eye. He says, I'm on my way back. I mean, what an example. Edwin C. Archer, the nutrition and obesity researcher in the University of Alabama, says this, quote, how you spend your day determines whether you store food as fat or store your food in your muscle healthfully. How you spend your day. It's up to us, our responsibility. So there's two ways to exercise properly, and we have to do both. One is aerobic exercise. That's the kind of exercise you think of walking, running, getting your heart beating, blood flowing. Dr. Peter Mason, who is an MD in Harvard University, says, quote, walking may be as close to a magic bullet as you will find in modern medicine. If there was a pill that could lower the risk of chronic disease like walking does, people would be clamoring for it, end quote. The Times columnist in Victoria, in an article in December of 2011, it said the title was Activity, Not Weight, is the Key to Health. Paul Van Wyken is the director of exercise physiology at the Cleveland Clinic in Canada. And since 1970, he has studied two groups. He's studied fit people who were overweight and skinny people who were not fit. And he found that the fit people who were overweight perform better in almost every health category when compared to skinny people who were not fit at all. That's encouraging to those of us who are genetically predisposed to be a little hefty. And the idea is if you can be fit, you can be a little overweight, and you can have all the benefits of being healthy. Charles Hillman did a study in the University of Illinois. And there was an article about it in Newsweek in 2007. It was titled Stronger, Faster, and Smarter. The article says, Hillman's study is part of a recent and rapidly growing movement in science showing that exercise can make people smarter. And there are clues that physical activity can stave off the beginnings of Alzheimer's disease and other cognitive disorders. Now listen to this. No matter your age, it seems a strong, active body is crucial for building a strong, active mind. Aerobic exercise helps the heart pump more blood to the brain along with the rest of the body. More blood creates more, means more oxygen and thus better nourished brain cells. We have trouble remembering, we get forgetful. Exercise. Get the blood flowing to the brain. So the first is aerobic exercise. The second is strength training, building muscles, legs, arms, back, chest. The fact is, after age 50, if we do not exercise, we lose 10% of our strength, 10% of our muscle mass every year if we don't exercise. After age 50. So in the 10 years between 50 and 60, you lose 10% a year. You're well over, you're about three quarters less strong than you were 10 years ago if you do nothing. Dr. Pat O'Shea, who is a professor of exercise and sport science at Oregon State University, says, quote, and think about this as we get older. People don't go to nursing homes because they are cardiovascularly fit. They go there because they lack the strength to lead a functional home life. It doesn't do you much good to have a strong heart if you lack the strength to get out of a chair or you can't get from your car to the supermarket. Dorothy's mom, in her old age, the muscles were just gone. And it was very difficult to get in and out of a chair. And once you lose it, you can't get it back. So the key is don't lose it. The key is to exercise for the rest of one's life. Dr. Stanley Burge, who is a director of a program on aging at Washington University in St. Louis, said this, quote, "We now understand that what we have ascribed to aging is simply, for the most part, due to inactivity." It's due to inactivity, not getting old. If we don't stress our skeletons, we are going to lose them. So when we exercise, we build not only the muscles, but the bones in our arms and legs minutely move when we exercise. And that's almost like a break. And the body comes in and builds the bone back bigger and stronger as it builds the muscle bigger and stronger. Dorothy and I had the privilege of visiting a lady who owned a ranch east of Roswell, New Mexico. We would go to Roswell once a month or every 3 weeks from Lubbock when we lived in Texas. And we would stop by her ranch house. And she was, at the time, probably 75, maybe closer to 80. First time we pulled up into her yard, went through the gate, I see her over there in the field, and she's got a post hole digger manually digging post holes, putting up a fence. And she is sweating like crazy. So we walk over, and she brings us into the ranch house and fixes us some tea or lemonade, I can't remember. And I've mentioned this before, I looked up at the rafter. It's an old ranch house. There's a beam over the top with a big pulley about like that, with a wheel about like that. And I look up there, and she sees me looking up there, and she didn't say a thing. And I said, "What on earth is that for?" And she says, "Oh, that's my arthritis machine." And she said, "See that rope over there?" And said, "I get up on this ladder and put the rope over the pulley, and when my shoulders are hurting, and so I tie a knot at each end of the rope, and I just do this in the pulley. And then I do this, and then I do this. And I work my shoulders. It takes 5-10 minutes. And said, the pain goes away. Been doing it for years. What a concept. Moving the body. The Yakima Herald Republic had an article in 2012, in December, said, and the title was Strength, Power, and Friendship. Quote, "A study released in April by the University of British Columbia links strength training to better brain function. What's more, older women already demonstrating the signs of dementia showed improvements in memory, attention span, problem solving, decision making after 6 months of weight training. According to a study, countless other studies have shown that strength training increases bone mass and density in the elderly." So the question is, let me ask the question, how would you like to lose weight sitting on the couch? Obviously, all of us would. And we can do that through weight training. Because when you exercise, when you lift the weights, what happens, take the bicep muscle, when you're lifting and you feel that burn in there, you lift heavy enough, you feel a little burn, the muscles in that bicep are being torn ever so slightly. That's what causes the burn. And so, and it causes the bone to move. So then what happens when you quit exercising and you're lying on the couch? The body uses the food, the fuel, the energy that you take in to repair the muscle while you're sitting on the couch, and repair the bone while you're sitting on the couch. So if you can exercise, you know, 30 minutes a day lifting some weights, you will lose weight, you will burn calories while you're sitting around while the body repairs the muscles and the bones that you stressed when you exercised. So for both aerobic exercise and strength training to work, you have to do it a minimum of 20 minutes a day, 3 to 4 days a week. 20 minutes a day, 3 to 4 days a week. People say, I don't have the time. 20 minutes a day, 3 to 4 days a week is 1% of your time that week. 1%. We can afford it. We can all make time. And I'm not suggesting you do something that I haven't been doing for years. After I went to that doctor, I started exercising aerobically. When I had my back problems, the only way I could overcome my back problems was through a physical therapist that got me on a weightlifting program. So today, I exercise about an hour and 45 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week. I do 45 minutes of aerobics, 30 minutes of weightlifting, about 10 minutes of stretching, 4 to 5 times a week. And that equals 5% of my week. 5%. It's an investment. And I'm telling you, if I didn't exercise, I wouldn't have the energy to do the job that I'm doing today at age 72. Just couldn't do it. Wouldn't happen. But you don't need a gym membership. Thankfully, we have a gym membership. It costs about $400 a year. $400 a year. But you blow that in the first visit to a doctor that, you know, for some weird thing or an emergency room. But you don't need a gym membership. Just go out and walk. Just walk. And then, you know, in the kitchen, sit on a chair, grab a couple of soup cans, and start doing this, and start doing this, and start doing this. And then get some soup, you know, get a bag of beans or something and just do some squats. And just over time, build up. When you first start walking, maybe walk around the block once, then go a little farther the next day, a little farther, a little farther, a little farther, and make those soup cans weigh a little more and a little more. And then if you want to buy a dumbbell at the, you know, at a store, you can do that. They cost $10. No big deal. You don't need a gym to do that. Now, we all remember Jack LaLanne. Remember Jack LaLanne? He was a fitness and health expert. I remember seeing him on television in the 50s. In his 50s, this guy swam from Alcatraz Island to Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. Alcatraz Island is a mile out in the bay, San Francisco Bay. And it is generally regarded as escape-proof. Nobody ever escaped from it because of the horrible currents that are around that island, that a fit man could not swim from Alcatraz into Fisherman's Wharf. When he was in his 50s, they shackled him, his legs together, and tied his hands behind his back, threw him in the water at Alcatraz, and he swam to Fisherman's Wharf in his 50s. To mark his 60th birthday, he did the same thing a second time, handcuffed and shackled, and he towed a 1,000-pound boat from Alcatraz to Fisherman's Wharf. And for his 70th birthday, he towed 70 boats with one person in each boat across Long Beach Harbor with his hands tied behind his back and his feet shackled together at age 70. Now think about that. And he died at age 97, healthy and fit. He could do push-ups like you wouldn't believe at age 97. Just pop them out. Set-ups, didn't make, but he worked every day. Now, what an example. So let's think about this in conclusion. Let's say you walk into a Starbucks, and we're dreaming here, but let's say you order a latte and you give, and it's a buck. So you order your latte, you give the guy a dollar. He goes over and makes it, brings the latte back, and gives you $2. Think you might go back? Yeah, I think we would. We'd go back. Because not only do we get the latte, but we get an extra dollar. Now that's exactly what happens with every minute you invest in exercise. For every minute you exercise, you extend your lifespan 2 minutes. And during the minute you exercise, you feel better. You feel really good. You have more energy. You have more attention. There's a spring in your step. You don't have the aches and pains. So let's remember that our bodies are the temple of God. They're where God resides, not only with His Holy Spirit, but in our minds. And our bodies are an example to other people about the fact that we are part of God's church. We are living the life God wants us to live. Now, how would God react if we pollute that gift that He's given us, our bodies? How would He react if we don't take care of the gift that God's given us? So I hope today that you will be inspired to take greater care of your body. Eat food, not too much, mostly plants. Keep moving throughout the day. Exercise throughout the day. Keep active every day. And if we do that, then we'll be doing our part, you see. And then when we get sick, we can go to God and ask for healing with a clear conscience. So let's remember to take care of these wonderful bodies God has given us so we can fulfill our destiny, our calling, and we can serve others in the church.